Hello and welcome to the 100 Podcast. Zed and Charlie here with you. Hope you're well. Today we're doing another of our retention specials with retention deadline day fast approaching. We're looking at every single franchise and thinking through which players their men's and women's teams will want to keep around. Today we are doing the Oval Invincibles, a side, Charlie, that has a lot of good players that will be wanting a lot of money, which complicates how they're going to have to go around this draft.
Yeah, absolutely. That applies to both men's and women's teams. There's a lot of quality in both of these squads, but you can only keep so many. And when you're trying to fit them all on the same ladder, it's very, very tough. So no matter what you do and what players you prioritize, there are going to have to be some tough decisions. And there's going to have to be some very good players being let go into the draft.
And it complicates things on the women's side, given all the drama that happened last season. It's a separate story. We'll get onto that. Let's do the men's side first. And first of all, I think we should do the big headline here, Charlie. With players wanting, you know, boost in the amount of money they're getting, we've had to bump up some players, Will Jacks to 125K, for example. That means we've taken the decision to release Jason Roy. Now, obviously, Jay Roy's not had the best of form recently. He's been struggling a bit. Obviously, played that great ODI innings recently, but has been a bit of a waning force. Regardless, that is quite a big step to take. So, shall we run through the rationale behind releasing him? Is it just a case of there are lots of other young players that we need to keep a hold of for the Oval Invincibles?
I think that's definitely part of it. There's lots of players here who were on quite low wages compared to what they probably could have been earning if they entered the draft. And let's face it, they're going to want more money. I think it's also the case that Jason Roy is a bit of a waning force right now. He's been a quality player for a very long time, but is he worth 125K at the moment, given his recent record? I'm not convinced he is, if I'm honest. So it's a combination for me of wanting to make sure you keep hold of that really strong domestic core and value them correctly, and also refreshing the team where it might be needed. So it's a really tough decision because Jay Roy has been a quality player for a very long time now, but I don't know if I can justify keeping him in that top bracket right now.
He also had a terrible 100 last year. Six innings, averaged 8.5, a strike rate of 100. Last year, Danny Briggs, in only 15 deliveries, scored one less boundary than Jason Roy did in the entire tournament. Just an absolute disaster. And look, we like Jason Roy. He has in his career had those real highs and then those horrible low periods where everyone writes him off and he comes back. However, I do think if you're Oval Invincibles, you have young players you want to keep, Will Jacks, for example. You know, you've got Reese Topley, Tom Curran, they'll want paying as well. Just feels like the right time. And it does almost feel like in Will Jacks, you have the successor there who offers something with the ball, offers a lot in the field, has been on form and has been, you know, a better player than Jason Roy recently. Averaged 43.5 in the 100 last year, strike at 171. Just feels like the player that you pay in this situation and you let Jason Roy go. So it's difficult. But then also when you consider the other players that we're hoping to keep around, you know, there's rationale there. Let's just go through the top pick. So Will Jacks are having 125K. We're also assuming they'll write to match Sonal Narine at 125K as well. That would make sense. Sam Billings and Tom Curran 100K there. Reese Topley and Sakib Mahmood in round five and round six. Now, I think Topley, Mahmood, Curran, all worth keeping. I think Curran adds a lot with bat and ball. Reese Topley is an excellent operator. We know what Sakib can do. We're keeping Sam Billings because I think that's what the club are going to do. He's the captain. However, I do think there's a debate to be had over whether he's worth 100K. Last year, let's just go for this example, in the 100, averaged 13, striking 131, struggled a bit. I think the Oval are going to keep him, which is why we've kept him. We're trying to be realistic. But for me, I kind of struggle to see Sam Billings 100% being worth 100K, given the caliber of other players that could be available at that price.
I have to agree. I don't think I'd do it personally, but they're going to do it. So for the purpose of that, we're going to keep him here. But For me, if I'm retaining a domestic batter for 100K, I think I'd want someone with a higher strike rate than Sam Billings, someone who is capable of cranking it up to fifth and sixth gear. And Billings very rarely has done that in recent times. He's a great player and very good at what he does, but I'm not sure if what he does is necessarily worth 100K. Nevertheless, that is what they're going to pay for him, and it's just logical to assume that that's the case.
It's interesting as well. They do have Jordan Cox. We've had this discussion before. Jordan Cox can play the Billings role. He's much cheaper. You wonder if you really need both of them in the squad. I don't know. It just, for me, I'm not completely sure it's worth it. Also, let's talk about the T20 Blast last year as well. Billings played 12 games in that. Averaged 25, fine. Striking 117. I mean, it's just not good enough. And, you know, I don't really look at that and think, well, he's even necessarily a 100-level player. If you're looking at it that way, looking at the stats from last year, clearly he is. You want him in the squad. But 100K feels real steep. So let's set out the stall here that we wouldn't necessarily retain Sam Billings in that slot. I think we agree on that. But let's just say they're going to, because that is, I think, as captain, as a building block there, what the thinking will be. The thing with all of that is, because you're paying Jacks, Billings, Curran, Topley, Mood, those are five-class players. But that does mean if you write to match Son on the Ryan, you don't have any picks until round 7, and your picks are in round 9, round 10, and round 11, which complicates things. Before we get into, you know, how that complicates things, let's also talk about the other players there. We mentioned Jordan Cox, 60K. Also kept around Gus Atkinson at 40K. Good player. We both like him. And Matt Milnes and Nathan Sauter. All of them, I think, are good squad options at the very least. Sauter's a leg spinner. Milnes is a decent backup. Gus Atkinson's got a lot of upside. And if you've got Curran, Topley, Mahmood, and then you've got Atkinson and Milnes there as well, that's just a nice place to be in, especially when you throw Sam Curran into the mix. So we like that. But it does complicate things here, because you're going to have to go and get overseas batters in round 7 and round 9, and that can be difficult.
It absolutely can be difficult. We don't know who's going to be entering the draft necessarily. We don't know what kind of players are going to put themselves in at what reserve price. But if you look at the history of the draft and where it's gone, yes, you know, last year they picked up, say, Riley Rousseau in that kind of position. That was a great pick, but he's going to go much higher this year, you'd think. He's not going to accept 60K likely, because he's had a great year or two since then. So you think you've got to pick someone else like that, maybe, who's been flying under the radar, or you have to accept that the quality of player you're getting there isn't as good as what you could get if you had more slots higher up. That's the trade-off with retaining a lot of good domestic players higher up. You have to be willing to accept you're going to have to dig a little deeper in those overseas picks. And to be fair, historically, they've done well there. So I'm going to back them to do a decent job there. That's just how they're built as a unit. But there is a trade-off there. And I guess it's debatable if it's positive or negative on the whole.
I think the issue is, right, you're not going to get Riley Rousseau again last year, because they kind of lucked out in that regard. But he got really, really, really hot after they picked him. So that benefited them a great deal. I do think a big issue with this comes in finding that second player. But let's just say you find a good player like Rousseau in round 7, great. Then they've had the issue of picking up Hilton Cartwright, who I don't think either of us are really convinced by. You don't know the kind of player that's going to be available at that slot. You don't know if maybe going after an Ashton Turner. At the very least, it's a second tier overseas player. And that does hurt you. I think also when you look at this batting lineup as well, they're lacking a bit of punch at the top. The way this is structured, Jacks will open, Sam Curran at 3, Billings and Cox at 4 or 5, Curran and Ryan at 7 or 8. You just want those two slots to have at least one star player in it, and you don't know if you're going to get that, which complicates things. Now, let's just say they're starting 11 next year. Will Jacks, Sam Curran, Sam Billings, Sean Cox, insert a couple of overseas batters there, and then Tom Curran, Son on the Ryan, Sakamood, Reece Topley, and another domestic bowler. You'd say that is a really gun bowling lineup, but the batting is just, it just leaves a lot to be desired.
I think it does a bit, but this has been the story of Oval for the last couple of seasons, really. They've been a bowling side first and foremost. And that's clearly been a strategy of theirs. They've gone bowler heavy and they always go in with a couple of bowlers who can bat and can float up and down the order. We've seen that with the Ryan. We've seen that with both Tom and Sam Curran. That's how they set up. That's how they want to play their cricket. I don't imagine that will change this year. That's clearly a balance they're happy with. Personally, I'm not 100% sold it works for them with these particular players. I feel like they need a bit more proven firepower in that middle order and now in that top order as well, now that Jason Roy's gone. Otherwise, I just think it's going to be repeated the last couple of seasons, which is when you get good bowling performances, but ultimately the batting isn't really enough to put a big score on the board. So, look, having a really good bowling attack can win you competitions, more so than batting in many cases. But you also do need to have a good batting lineup, otherwise you're not going to stand much of a chance. And they've got the tools there to put it together, but on paper, what we've got here, I'm not convinced. I think they're going to need some big signings, and I don't know where they're going to come from.
This is the thing with, again, keeping Sam Billings. If you have Sam Billings out and you could keep someone at, you know, bringing in overseas at 100K, you feel better. We've talked a lot about prioritising domestic players. So this isn't a bad place for them to be in. Not at all. The issue does come in just having to find a star player down in round seven. So I think that there's the difference where we talk about finding overseas contributors down the order. Right, that's fine. You can find those players. But I think you have to know that the players you're paying are stars. And if they're domestic stars, great. You're paying your Liam Livingstons, your Will Smeeds, your Moeen Alleys, if you're Phoenix's case, great. Do that. Wonderful. Brilliant. You know, find an overseas lower down. If you're paying Sam Billings, there's a conversation to be had there. So, you know, you can find these contributors lower down, but you've got to be paying the right players. And I don't think you can be... I don't think you've been keeping a lower level player who doesn't deserve that level of money if you don't have other picks. If you're the Welsh Fire and you desperately need leadership, you've got all these picks. Yeah, keep Sam Billings, fine. But if you're Oval Invincibles and you just would love another real gun batter and you can't quite seem to find one later on in the draft, that is where issues come about, at least in my opinion. In terms of what the outlook is, obviously, they're assuming they're going to write to match Son and Ryan in round one, which I think would be the right decision. Let's assume they do that. They're picking round seven, round nine, round 10, 11. That's quite late. There are a lot of retentions up the draft. So, you know, there will be players available. The issue is, of course, that with the base price situation, you don't know who's going to be there at 60K. So knowing that and knowing that there are a couple of batting gaps to be filled, how are you feeling about the Oval Invincibles heading into this draft, Charlie?
Honestly, a little sketchier than I thought it might be originally. I'm really happy with the majority of players that we've got penciled in to be retained. I think our strategy of retaining lots of domestic talent makes sense. And I think the majority of them are very good and worth the money. But I just think it's going to be very hard to try and find Riley Rousseau 2.0 in that round seven slot and in the round nine slot below it. I think that's going to be a challenge. I think they've got a history of finding one good player and then the second one has been a little patchy. Now, Hilton Cartwright, you mentioned earlier, wasn't an ideal signing. The season before in that slot, it was Colin Ingram. Again, a bit past his peak and not really ideal, to be honest. So I fear that might be what happens again. And I think if that is the case, it isn't going to be as easy for them as it probably could have been. I think it's a decent core, but I think they've underperformed the last couple of seasons. And I think it might be a similar story again, if I'm honest, but there's a lot to go. So we'll see.
Lots of good players, lots to like about this side. I think there's a pattern though, as you say, and I think if it was not to work out this year, they probably need to reconsider their strategy and the way they're going about things. So it does feel like there's another level that they're not taking advantage of at the moment. Let's move on to the women's side, who, again, we've gone very domestic heavy here. We have only kept domestic players in this scenario. In round three and round four, we're keeping Lauren Winfield-Hill and Alice Capsey there. Tash Farrant, we're keeping in round six. And the breakout left-arm spinner, Sophia Smale. Great, great story. Welsh, which would be nice if the Welsh Fire were able to get their hands on her, but Oval are going to keep her at home. What we've done here, Charlie, is kept, you know, an experienced English player in Winfield Hill, an absolute gun in Alice Capsey, really good seamer in Tash Farrington, and an exciting, you know, young spinner in Sophia Smell. Lots to like about this. But, you know, this Oval Invincible side are another one where they have lots of players they probably want to retain. And they just don't necessarily have the ability to do it because they can only keep four.
Yes, it's a challenge. It's a real challenge. I think I'm happy with the four that we've chosen here. I think in Winfield Hill, you have experience, you have a very good top order batter, and you have a leadership candidate straight away. So really happy with that. Alice Capsey is an absolute gun. Arguably the first genuine 100-made superstar. And again, clearly no-brainer. She is going to be quality for the next decade at least. Farron and Smale, equally very good players. And I don't think I have to particularly spend too long justifying why we're keeping them. But I think the headline here potentially is that we're not keeping any overseas players, particularly Marizan Kapp and Danny van Niekerk. It's a big loss because they're two quality cricketers. But I think given what happened last year, given some of the drama, I don't know if they're going to want to come back.
It's difficult, isn't it? Because if you're not aware of the drama around it, early on in the season, Danny van Niekerk wasn't playing. Instead, Susie Bates was playing. Van Niekerk, obviously, captain in 2021 when they won the title. Marizan Kapp obviously married Danny van Niekerk. Lots of stuff swirling around social media. Just a weird situation. And, you know, especially with the stuff going on around Van Niekerk as well at the moment, not in the South African World Cup squad for absolute nonsense reasons over fitness. It does feel like, especially if Kapp and Van Niekerk are going to be a package deal, it seems unlikely that Oval would want to bring that drama back into the building, especially when you'd be very, very keen to keep these English players on the roster. It feels like bringing both of them back just doesn't necessarily seem likely. And it probably makes sense for both of them to have a fresh start. Marizan Kapp, probably in contention for the first overall pick. Danny van Niekerk, you know, if fully fit, he's gonna get a contract as well. Just feels like the right thing to do for potentially both parties. But also, there's the other thing. You know, we talk about boundary percentage and, you know, the way you set up teams, the way you build teams. Having that kind of drama in your dressing room is not a good thing to be dealing with. It's never going to be a positive. So you think moving on and building around a new core of experienced players, however good Kapp and van Niekerk are, might be the right play.
It's hard to know exactly what happened there. I don't want to speculate. I don't know the situation, but we can only go by what was circulated on social media. And I think it's likely, more so than Oval not wanting them back, I think the likely scenario is that they would probably not want to come back themselves as players. Yeah. I think they would probably want to seek a fresh start. And I think they would be entirely justified in wanting to do that, given how events played out last year. I think they're both players of exceptional quality and experience and ability. I think they're both going to command a top bracket salary in this draft. So I think more power to them to go and seek that fresh start. And I think it's going to be a good move for them.
100%. I do think, and there's a lot of debate about this, but Susie Bates was obviously on a heater last season. Van Niekerk wasn't bowling, wasn't at full fitness. So you get why, you know, the pragmatic option is to play Bates, who's maybe the better batter. However, I do think there is a flicker of disrespect to drop your captain who took you to the title last year, I believe was the MVP of the league, in fact, or at least one of the top performers in it. I do think there's a disrespect there and the line crossed, which probably makes the player, or the players in this instance, not want to trust the organisation. So I get why it's the right thing for them. And I think it's probably the right move for everyone involved, to be frank. In terms of other discussions, there are a couple of other players. Eva Gray had a nice season last year. You wonder if you were kind of, you know, the player you want to keep around. She was great. Couldn't quite fit her in. Maddy Villiers, her bowling's dropped off a little bit. It was a nice all-round package. Again, I think with both Alice Capps and Sophia Smale there, it just felt difficult to fit her in. So they are letting some really good players hit the auction pool. So interested to see how they go about things. They'll have both their 125K brackets open, at least in what we're predicting, and we're not perfect here. We're predicting that they're going to have effectively the fifth and sixth overall picks in the draft, you know, assuming that players are already going to be slotted into the top bracket. So they will have the ability to bring in a couple of star players. I've always felt that Danny Wyatt, who might be on the way out of the Southern Braves, screams Oval Invincibles. That might be a nice signing. Maybe they go after Sarah Glenn. Maybe they go the overseas route and really look at bringing in a superstar in on that regard. There's lots of options there. When you have this domestic core, you can absolutely build around them. So I think the confidence level at Oval, as long as they draft well and bring in some experienced names, should be pretty high.
Absolutely. I think having that really solid domestic core locked in lower down gives you the flexibility to essentially pursue any path you want in those first two picks. If you want to go hard and heavy early on overseas players, get two absolute guns in there, you can do so. Or if you want to go really heavy and hoover up the best domestic talent out there, again, you can do that. The flexibility that offers you is not to be underestimated. I think if you can get those four players underneath the top salary bracket, you're in a really good position. Personally, I'm probably leaning towards the overseas route. I think that the majority of the high quality domestic players will either be gone or retained by that point. So that might be the route they take. But either way, you're in a pretty confident position, I think. So that leaves them in a strong position heading into the draft.
So a good position for the women's side to be in, a good position for the men's to be in. They just have to absolutely nail this draft to build up their teams. That's what makes all of this so fascinating. That's what makes our podcast in the future, where we look at what players might be selecting, kind of do our draft previews, even more interesting. So lots to come. We'll do a podcast for every single franchise. Keep a lookout on our feed for those, and head over to our Twitter page at Podcast100 for all of the fun there, and check out everything we're doing basically. But for now, thank you very much for listening. We'll speak to you next time.